War doesn't end when you leave the battlefield. The hardest fight comes after service. Identity, purpose, and tribe. Where do you stand when the uniform comes off? This is where we talk about it. No bullshit, no filters, just real stories from those who've been through it. This is the Great Guns Podcast with your host, James Scott.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Great Guns Podcast with your host, James. And today's guest is Lisa Hodge. Now, Lisa is not a veteran. However, she's doing some amazing work within the defense realm. And obviously, she'll tell us all about it. So let's get across to Lisa and say hi. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I know I'm not a veteran, but thank you for having me anyway.
Okay, but we don't have to get that right in there. It's a show about veterans for veterans. So, Lisa, yes, you're not a veteran, and we were just chatting a little earlier about like your connection with the military through your grandfathers and that sort of thing. However, you do work as a civil servant. So, what is it you do?
So, I am a commercial officer within MOD. So, I manage contracts on behalf of the MOD, which is something I've done for quite a while now. It's where I've met so many people within the military and actually made so many different connections and different friends within the military that, like, from all parts of the military as well, not just army, all parts of the military. And it's been quite eye-opening to see how different things are for people in the military versus in civvy land.
Yeah, it is quite different, very much so. Okay, so the kind of burning question is that, how is it then that you got involved with the Defence Dyslexia Network? How did that come about if you didn't have that kind of direct connection?
So at the time I was working in a team of people and there were a couple of other people in the team, and we were talking one day about dyslexia, but we weren't talking about it in our normal voices. We were very much whispering about it in the kitchen area. And at the time it was me and it was a couple of other civilians and one person from the army. And we were just talking about it and we were like, why are we whispering about dyslexia? Why is it that we can't like really bring ourselves into the workplace and just be dyslexic and bring everything that's positive about dyslexia into the workplace? So at this point in time, I had only just actually had my diagnosis for dyslexia. It was something that I'd always thought and knew about myself, but just never had that label. So that's when we thought, you know what, we really need to do something to help other people, because actually whispering about it and not really doing anything about it doesn't help anybody. And that's when we then created the network and we started scooping up other people around us that were also dyslexic. And when you have that kind of open conversation amongst other people and people hear you talking about it so openly, you have other people come up to you and be like, oh, I'm dyslexic too, can I join in? And it just opens the door for other people to just share their experience too. So yeah, we very quickly kind of developed what we were going to do. We had a lot of people push it back and being like, oh, it's not going to work, or maybe you want to consider being part of a bigger network that it's just about disabilities and stuff like that. And we felt very strongly that actually it wasn't. We wanted to be a standalone network and we wanted to kind of have our own voice and our own energy to go forward with this stuff. So we have gone very much with the mantra of ask for forgiveness rather than permission. Yeah. which, you know, has seen us go on quite well with the network, I'll be honest with you. We grew from about 5 people. And on the first day that we launched the network officially, I think we had about 120 people join the call. And we very, very much thought we'd probably have about 12 people join the call. So to have over 100 people, we were absolutely just blown away by it. We were all brand new to this kind of thing as well. None of us had done this stuff. And one of the guys who was in the army, I mean, he was quite confident. He was a major in the army, so he had that kind of like ability just to talk, and he was really good at just talking. And because of him, it just gave me that kind of confidence that actually it'd be okay. Because at the time, they'd asked me to be the chair of the network, and I was very much like, I don't think I can do that. I don't think I can do that at all. So I was like, I'll do it, but I want Simon to be the co-chair as well. So that's why we now have two co-chairs, a military co-chair and a civilian co-chair. We kind of look after the two separate sides of it. So Simon's not a co-chair anymore. He left service, unfortunately. I say unfortunately, it's great for him, but not
yeah,
from
I was
that
gonna
way.
Say, I'm sure he's enjoying his time that he's earned. Yeah.
He is, and I pester him regularly with lots of stuff. So he hasn't actually escaped us, but it was because of like the energy that we had between us that we kind of got the network to a point where we won our first award for being like a brand new network, and that was quite a big moment for us. Actually, weirdly, it was the same day that the Queen died that we won that award. So we were both in London at the time. Memorable for two separate reasons, but you know, I think that kind of empowered us to go further with the network. It was obvious that people needed the support because we had people coming to us being like, oh, well, how do I get support through the military? And we'd be like, well, that's a really good question. Don't know. And with Simon, he's had his diagnosis previously. I don't want to give too much of Simon's story away because you might have him on your podcast one day. But he's already had his kind of diagnosis previously. So for him, he'd not been on that journey with the military, but there were other people who have been on that journey with the military. So, you know, as we're going on with this network thing, we were scooping up more people, and the more experience that people had, we were able to kind of like draw a bit of a picture of how you could actually get support in the military. And it's not going to surprise anybody to know that there is not a one size fits all approach. Different parts of the military do different things, which, you know, when you're trying to sort of pinpoint a one solution and saying this is how you go about it, it's really difficult. And then also you then expected to write business cases and stuff like that to get the support that you need. And when you're just like a second, you really, really struggle writing business cases, asking to do a business case when you really can't even do it without support is
100%.
It's asking a fish to climb a tree. Yeah. But just kind of going from those early blocks to kind of just winning like that award really just empowered us. I think it gave us that permission that we maybe hadn't had before, that we were going the right way.
It's a validation of people are noticing you and what you're doing is being seen as a positive change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Did you say Simon was a major? Okay. So someone who's had reaches, you know, the heights of a major and has dyslexia is a powerful story in itself, isn't it? Because it's,
yeah,
you would never think someone at that level could carry something like that and get to achieve that. People would think, oh, that's not possible, but it is.
Yeah, it's really surprising because like the military don't talk about anything that could be perceived as a weakness. Like that's kind of, I think that's something that is very much drilled into people. And obviously then dyslexia is scooped into that because people think that's a weakness for me, that I struggle with this stuff, so I'm not going to tell anybody about this stuff. And when we first set the network up, one of the sponsors we managed to get for the network was actually a Major General, and we were like absolutely just like amazed the fact that he got to Major General and he was dyslexic. And for us, that's really high ranking officer to get that far in his career and be dyslexic. We were like, wow, that is like top tier.
I think that's got to be a massive takeaway from this chat. First off,
yeah,
is don't ever let anything like that stop your career, because guys have done it. They've achieved. I mean, there's a fantastic ranks to achieve.
I know. Yeah. And we were like so pleased that he came and spoke on our first event that we did. He came and spoke in front of lots of different people. And I know there were lots of junior ranking people in that auditorium that day that took a lot away from what he said, because it wasn't a case of him hiding his dyslexia. He was being very open and honest about it. And we had a brigadier in the audience that day as well, who said to us that he knew that Major General was going to be leaving service shortly, and he was more than willing to join as a champion for the network after. And like to have the support from obviously like the one-star, two-star community is massive, because you can open so many doors with that level of support, because suddenly it's not just a thing that you hide because you think, oh God, that's such a weakness. You have people that senior standing up and saying, I'm dyslexic and I've struggled. And, you know, for some of them, they'd never even spoken about it before. It was a case of like, they've joined this network and they've then said, look, I'm dyslexic too. It's never stopped me. And that is a powerful door to open, I think. It gives that permission for other people to follow suit.
Yeah, it certainly, if it's someone near the top of the ladder, if you like, yeah, it gives the lower rungs that permission to say, yeah, I've got that. So you got all of this positive. Was there any pushback from any of the services, or was it all well received?
It was quite well received, I'll be honest. We've had pushback when it comes to the policy and stuff like that. And I think this is the difficult bit, really, for the military, is the kind of how it's perceived of how people in the military are protected with the Disability Act. So in civilian land, we're well protected by the Disability Act. You know, we don't ever have to question whether or not it's going to be applicable in our role or not. But for the military, it is very much a grey area of how much protection and when that protection would apply and wouldn't apply. So that was something that we've really had to sort of navigate as we've gone along with this, because you can't promise the world to people when you can't deliver that. It's not fair to say, you know, we can give you all of this support, because actually there are times when that support isn't going to be there for you. If you're on the front lines, that support probably isn't going to be there for you. You need to be able to do your role without that extra layer of support. So that was quite a big kind of learning curve for us as a network, because it wasn't really something we'd kind of anticipated having to navigate. It was a case of like, oh yeah, okay, now we need to get our heads around it and delve into it. It's not like you can challenge that policy, because obviously there are going to be times when you can't have that level of support in all the opportunities you're going to have available to you. So that was difficult. But in the terms of being accepted by the military, I don't think we've had any kind of real pushback from any area. I think what we've kind of seen is a lot of people are doing a lot of good stuff in pockets, but to join that good work up together so we can all learn from each other, I think has been really, really important. So I think that's kind of what we've managed to work towards as a network. I'm not going to say we've done it, because
there's always more work, isn't there?
There's always more to do, but you know, it's where our passion lies, I think, to be able to push it forward to make sure that everyone is included and everyone gets supported.
Yeah. So just for those listeners that are listening, I interviewed Kirk Davis, who is a serving member of the armed forces, who's got dyslexia, and he's in a senior NCO role. And he was saying that often people should try and get diagnosed whilst they're still in service, because once they leave service, it's that much harder for a veteran to then get diagnosed and get the help and support they need. So thinking about that, what are the best routes for, and not necessarily just, we tend to always lean towards the Army, but you know, you mentioned you do work with the Navy in that as well, and the Air Force. What's the best plan for people to do that? How do they go about getting this sorted so that, you know, because they might be thinking about leaving, or they're in that transitional period, or you know, they could be being medically discharged, and that can happen quite quickly. So yeah. What's the best plan of action for them?
It's usually through the education centres whilst you're in the military. So it'd be the education centres that would screen you and then look to put in place a diagnosis for you. And I think the reason why that's so important to look at and explore is because when you become a civilian, you then have to pay for that diagnosis yourself. And it's not cheap. I've had to pay for it for my son, and it was almost £1,000. So it's really kind of expensive.
You had to pay £1,000 to have your son diagnosed with dyslexia. Yeah. So is that not done through the NHS, or is it done privately?
So it's done privately because dyslexia is not recognised as a medical condition. It's recognised as a learning condition. So it has to be done through a specialist teacher, not the NHS. Which is really, really frustrating, because actually there's so much more to dyslexia than just learning. And I think that's the kind of misconception you get when you think about dyslexia. You think, oh, it's just about reading, or it's just about spelling. But it's like, actually, there is so much more that goes underneath the surface of dyslexia. It affects your kind of cognitive ability, your processing of information, your short-term memory, and just the ability to just pick up information and run with it. Sometimes it's really stressful.
You've missed off a key part there. That's going to massively affect your mental health, which is a health issue. But I do understand it does, you know, in a way it does make sense that it's seen as an educational thing because that's normally where they pick it up. But you would have thought in schools they'd pick it up earlier than they do, you know, I suppose the resources aren't there for that.
Is it
the same for all of the services where one would go in and look for a diagnosis? I mean, what do you say? I mean, I think I've got dyslexia. I mean, most of the time they'll go, yeah, go and jog on because you're trying to take the mick or something. What is the process? How do you initiate it?
So for what we've got in place is a little screener, and it gives you a bit of an idea, a bit of an indicator of whether or not you are dyslexic. So we always recommend that anybody thinking they could be dyslexic does the screening, just to kind of give them that extra bit of evidence that when they go to their kind of education centre or they go to this sort of the official screening process, they've got something to go with that says, actually, you know, there is a possibility that this person is dyslexic. And that is actually a screening test that's being made by Dyslexia. So it's an actual official kind of like body that produced this screening test to give you an indication. And it's kind of irrefutable, really, because once you've gone through that process and you've answered all those questions honestly, it does give you a really good indicator. So we've got lots of ambassadors in the network as well, and they're from right across the service. So even if you don't necessarily find all the support you need straight away on the support pages we've got, you will find it from one of our ambassadors who have lived and breathed the process before you. And I think that's like a really good thing to have, is somebody to hold your hand along the process, because actually that journey of discovery can be quite lonely. You definitely go through the peaks and troughs of, well, am I making this up? Am I just going to end up looking stupid because I've decided that I'm this, but I'm not. So there are kind of many different emotions you go through. And as you said, your mental health can be massively, massively affected by that. And having that extra person to walk that path with you is really, really important. So for anybody who's kind of still in the military, still serving, reach out to those ambassadors, because there's so many people waiting to help that, you know, they're just waiting there. Just ask for help.
It's a question that kind of is popped into my head there. Is dyslexia a big thing in the military? I mean, is there a major issue, or is it the issue is that people that have it aren't being diagnosed and aren't getting support?
So I don't think it's a major issue. I think they say that 1 in 5 people are dyslexic. And I think if you look at these
That's overall. That's not
just
military.
General population. I don't think we have like official numbers, because you know, these kind of things don't get recorded, but I think a high proportion of people definitely go undiagnosed, especially because the education system from when we were in school was definitely not as receptive to kind of diagnosing people. But that's
Changed since the 50s, has it?
And it hasn't really changed an awful lot now. That's why we were in the position I was with my son. But it's, you know, it is improving, just very, very slowly. And I think this is why the network had to exist, because actually there's a lot of people that are still undiagnosed and still don't realise that actually this is what's probably causing that. Yeah, I've forgotten what your question was. So that's how my dyslexia has worked for me.
That's fine. No, you have answered it. I just find it interesting. So one in five has got dyslexia. Of the general population, that's quite a high statistic if you think about it. What's that? It's 20%. 20% of the population have got dyslexia.
I think it's been like, so they used to say 1 in 10 people, and that's come down to 1 in 5. And I think it's probably because before it was very much thought of as a boy thing. Like all of these conditions, they're usually a boy thing. But it turns out women can have
it too. Because you ladies always think you're smarter than us anyway.
Well, you know, we do like to remind you of this, but you don't listen to us.
That's an interesting, and it kind of does make sense, because there are, stereotyping, you know, Oh yeah, dyslexia. Yeah. It's the lads that get that. You know, and then like you think ADHD. Oh yeah, it's the lads because they look at them. They're hyperactive or they're this, that, and the other. Yeah, it was always that sort of thing, wasn't it?
I was just saying, it's just typical kind of like old-fashioned stereotypes that we just have to get rid of.
Yeah, we need to get rid of stereotypes. Yeah, 100%. But that just, I find that interesting. 20%, that's quite a high figure. Didn't realize that.
Okay. Yeah.
Best getting the diagnosis before you kind of transition out. Once they've got a diagnosis, what's going to change in their life? How's things going to change? What difference is it going to make?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Nothing's going to change overnight. You're not instantly going to be going, oh God, this is the moment I've waited for, because now everything's snapped into place. It's not. For a lot of people, it is like a light bulb moment. And it was for me, because I suddenly went, do you know what? I'm not stupid, actually. Turns out there's a reason my brain functions the way it does. So it kind of gives you that empowerment to think, well, I'm going to find out more about it. I'm going to find out more about how my brain works, what the challenges are that I come up against. And then also thinking about what your strengths are, because having a workplace passport is going to be really important to how well you do in the future. So having things in place to support you. So for me, it's having things like within the work package, it will read things aloud to me. So I don't have to read really long documents. I mean, in this world of kind of AI, having Copilot be able to summarize things for me, we can't imagine that happening even like 10 years ago. I can't imagine having that.
Definitely.
So I think what that diagnosis gives you is that ability to go, right, I'm now going to discover what that means for me and why or how I can be supported going forward. Because actually, when you enter the world of Civiland, you can be protected by the Disability Act. I know I'm seeing a lot about this, but actually knowing your rights and knowing what's available to you is really important, because you are protected by the Disability Act if you've got dyslexia. And that means they have to provide reasonable adjustments for you. So if you need a software package that isn't the norm, then they will have to look into providing something for you to support you with that difficulty. And that's going to be the key to sort of being good at your job going forward without having to really struggle to be good at your job.
Yeah, I find it just interesting there. Because you use the word disability and you're protected and you have rights as having a disability. But if you had a disability, normally there is a government department that looks after you, as in, like, getting, you would think that would be paid for. If you suspect you've got dyslexia, that you shouldn't have to be forking out your own pocket. I don't know, it just doesn't seem to connect for me. I could be wrong. I mean, but it just, you're looking at, you're test checking if someone's got a disability. Well, then surely.
Yeah.
I mean, someone else, like, you would get support to pay for that, not having to shell out a grand. Like, who has that spare? The majority of the population, just to fork out and go, I think I've got dyslexia, or my child's got dyslexia, for example, like you were talking about, there's £1,000. Like, a lot of people don't have that, especially nowadays. So I find that very interesting. Okay.
It is so important, because for me, for my son, it was the trigger for him to get all of his other diagnoses, because people didn't believe me before that. Whereas it took me months to be able to save that money just to pay for it. You know, it's paid for itself in the long run. And I know £1,000 is really like a lot of money. But, you know, for my son now, he's gone from not being able to read to being able to read fluently. And he's just choosing his GCSE options. And I'm like, oh, I can't believe this. But he's at the point where he has support and he gets supported in school. And he's not being left behind. So, yeah, it's difficult, though. It's very difficult.
Yeah. All right. So you're in the military, you go off, you've now had a diagnosis that you've got it. So it sounds like then that it basically what it does is it gives you the keys to open the door to find kind of the pathway for you, so that when you are transitioning out and hitting City Street, you know where you, what you can do and what's available to you. Is that kind of what that offers?
I think having that diagnosis is going to just be able to sort of cement in your head the strengths you've got. So when we're thinking about dyslexia, it's things like being able to spot patterns and being able to kind of see things that people don't necessarily see straight away. And I think, like with the likes of GCHQ, for example, they actively recruit people who are dyslexic because of the unique skill set that some of us possess. I mean, I'm not going to say everybody has these amazing skill sets, because some of us get stuck with not knowing the left from right, which is very frustrating.
Well, I've seen that with cadets. You can see them going with their fingers trying to work it out.
This is me every day in my life, asking my 11-year-old daughter, which is left and which is right.
Yeah, but then you have other skills. So
exactly, I've got other skills, and I've got a massive, crazy imagination that, you know, I think probably lots of people laugh at sometimes, but, you know, it's beneficial sometimes also.
Okay. Did you want to ask about the Women in Defence Award that you got back in 2003? And was that for your work with the Dyslexia Network?
Yeah, so I was nominated in the Inspirational Women's category, and obviously didn't expect to win it. I don't see myself as inspirational. I just see myself as just wanting to make a difference and make things better and easier for people. So being nominated for that award for the kind of helping to create the network and build the network to where it was at that point, I just thought, well, that's amazing. I'm really glad that, you know, somebody sees that effort is good. That was great. And I was like, I'm really happy just to be nominated. And then I got shortlisted and I was like, oh, wow, okay. Maybe other people think this works good too.
Yeah.
And I think it only really hit me when I was stood on the stage, because I got past the shortlisting and made it to the finalist. And I was sitting on the stage with all these other people looking at me, and they are some really top people from organisations who are within defence. And they're all looking at me with very, like, happy faces. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay, I've made it to the final. This is mad. And then to be announced the winner of it, it gave me then the platform to just talk about dyslexia in front of lots of people and why it was important to actually support people with dyslexia. And I think that moment for me was like, actually, people are taking dyslexia quite seriously. It's not a case of like, we're just doing this work over in this corner. That's lovely for them. It was more of a thing of, wow, okay, this is really big and it's really important. Like, I'd never seen it kind of from someone else's perspective, I don't think. I think I'd always just thought, well, I'm doing it because I want things to be better. So, like, for me, I'd always thought, well, I want it to be better for my son. And I don't think my son's ever going to be working in the R&D or anything like that. But there'll be other kids out there who are like my son, but come into the military or the MOD and feel completely lost. That's not what I want for anybody. Anybody who's starting out on their career, I want them to be able to just come into it and be like, oh, I'm dyslexic, I need this support, without having to whisper about it. And I think, like, bringing back to the veterans point, I think that's exactly what I would hope would happen for anybody who's leaving the service, is the fact that you have a diagnosis and you can go, well, this is me, and I understand why my brain is like it is, and I need this support, and that's okay. I don't need to hide the fact that I need this support, and that will kind of give that extra kind of boost to being able to look for a career outside of the military. And I probably make it sound very simple. It's definitely not, but I think it just gives you that extra bit of footing that maybe might be holding you back, but you don't even realize it's holding you back.
Yeah. Is the Defence Dyslexia Network open to ex-service personnel as well?
It's kind of in a weird phase at the moment with the network. So we're not out on social media or anything like that.
Mm.
We are very much kind of internal to the MOD. And I think our main struggle has always been that kind of, how do we push it further? So if anybody's got access to Defence Gateway or anything like that still, then you can absolutely join the network via that. But it's really difficult for us to kind of push it further. But this is my frustration, I think, is that we're all like volunteering our time to do this. It's not my day job. Just love doing it. But if it could be my day job, brilliant. But, you know, I see it one day being very much part of different organisations as they sort of recruit veterans into their organisations.
Okay. So if one was a veteran and kind of has heard this podcast or is in that situation where they think, oh, right, I could have, what advice have you got for them then? Where do they go to kind of start this ball rolling? Because you spoke about the assessment, but then I'm assuming that's within Defence Gateway.
So some of that information will be in there, yeah. We do have an email address as well that you can reach out to that I'll give to you after this and you can pop it out with it. I won't try and remember what it is because, again, dyslexia, short-term memory issues. And if you ask me to try and spell any of it as well, then it's not going to happen. So
that's right. Send it to me. We'll attach it in the bio for the episode, 100%. Okay, so where would you steer someone then?
So I would steer someone to us. Just email us and we'll try and help you as best as we can. I know you said you already interviewed Kirk. Kirk has got lots of great connections and I'm pretty sure he will be able to point you in the direction of one of his great connections because he knows everybody.
Yeah, he's a top man. I liked him. Okay, so brilliant. And then, so what the hopes, because we kind of touched on it just now, but you want to try and get it out into city street, but it's that breaking out of the kind of effectively the Defence Gateway, which I'm sure most people shouldn't be aware of. What other plans do you have? I mean, is something going to be happening with that soon, do you think? Or is it you're still a way off?
So I'd love it to be soon, but I think it's kind of one of the plans I really would love to do. I would love to do something with the cadets as well. I think getting people early and then at the beginning of their career and at the end of their career is like nice bookends as well to have. But at the moment, with our kind of current level of resource that we've got available to us, we're not offended in any way. We do this voluntarily and we do it because we want to do it. We want to make sure that support is there. But you know, if anyone's got any bright ideas or how we could do it, we are more than happy for you to help us and support us and do it that.
Yeah, okay. Well, because that's what I was thinking now, is like, who would you be looking for to come in and be able to offer you the support that you need to grow the network?
There's got to be some tech-savvy people out there. I mean, I've met lots of military people, and you have some really good skills, and I definitely don't have that skill set. But it doesn't stop me coming up with lots of different ideas and stuff like that. It's just how to implement those ideas, I think, is where we get stuck. So, yeah, anybody who's got any bright ideas of technology and stuff like that, then we are all ears.
All right. So there's a call out for any of you maybe listening or know of anyone that could assist and try and grow that and help them build something bigger. I was just thinking that you guys should be able to get involved with youngsters as well through the three or four different cadet forces as well.
I'd love to.
Are you actively involved with that or not?
No, not at the moment. We're not. It's something that I've always aspired to do. My brother used to be in charge of an air cadet squadron. And I know from him, like it's amazing to work with so many young people. They're so keen and so kind of engaged. And I think at that kind of early part, that's kind of where you have that hunger to want to join the military. And that's really where we should be supporting them as well, because actually, if we can show them this is a level of support that you can get from that early stage of your career, I think that would be amazing. I mean, these are all aspirations. I've got so many great plans of what we could and should be doing. It's just, you know, time and effort and money, I guess, that just stops it from happening. But yeah, I think, you know, our youngsters definitely could and should be able to access this as well.
Okay. All right. Brilliant. All right. Well, I do believe it's a good thing that you're doing 100%. And it's always a shame that a lot of these things are done out of someone's kind of side spare time and stuff, and then you don't have the resources. But saying that, the fact that you've got such a good support within the services, I think that's kind of would have been one of the biggest battles, is to be able to get in the door, and then it's going to be able to grow it.
Yeah, I mean, We've been alive now for 4 years this year, which is great. I mean, that's 4 years. And we've supported so many people throughout that. So I'm just grateful that we're very much still here, we're very much still doing what we've been doing all along. And actually, we've learned a lot as we've gone along. So we're really just proud of it, I think.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And, you know, 4 years, it's an achievement. So that's great. People can only access it through Japan's Gateway. So anyone who's currently serving or still has access, depending on whatever job roles you have, you can access it through that. And is it just the Defence Dyslexia Network?
Yeah, just the Defence Dyslexia Network.
Okay. And then you will give me an email that we can pop in the bio that we can then steer people towards if they have questions. And reaching out to you yourself, where's best if anyone wants to do that? Would that be on that email?
I'm on LinkedIn or on that email. So if you want to look at me up on
LinkedIn. Or on LinkedIn, yeah.
You can find me on there too. I'm active quite a bit on there talking about dyslexia. So if you want to hear more about dyslexia, then just follow me.
Okay. And I'll put that link down in the bio as well. So, yeah, 100%. Brilliant. Well, Lisa, thank you very much. I know it's Friday, so we're not going to keep you any longer. And I'm sure you were saying that you were very busy. So thank you very much for your time. And I really do hope that the people out there that listen kind of think about it and go, actually, this is something I might need to have a look at and see if, prior to stepping out of uniform, like you said, so you're not having to fork out and, you know, queues of people trying to get it sorted and, you know, the bureaucracy and everything that goes with it. So get onto Defence Gateway and have a look. Thank you very much for your time, Lisa. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's a wrap, folks, and a big thank you to our guest. Remember, keep moving forward. The fight's not over until you decide it is. Until next time, stay bold, stay fearless. Live life like it's too short for half measures. This is the Great Guns Podcast, signing off. And remember to subscribe to join our tribe.